Plant on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. Elizabeth Hay joins me now. Her new novel, Late Nights on Air, was recently shortlisted for the Giller Prize. Her previous novel, A Student of Weather, was a Giller Prize finalist. Her most recent novel, Garbo Laughs, was a bestseller and winner of the Ottawa Book Award, where she lives, and a finalist for the Governor General's Award. Late Nights on Air is an evocative and memorable book about the great vastness of the North and the intimacy of radio. The reviews have been quite good, published by McClelland & Stewart. The book retails for $32.99. I am pleased to welcome to the Plant on the Line program Elizabeth Hay. Good morning, Ms. Hay.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us.
Mm-hmm, you're welcome.
On this book tour, you're probably asked this a million times. I'm going to ask you again. What is this book about? And I guess, well, I think we sort of know what it's about, but you didn't grow up in the North. You went to Yellowknife when you were 21, were you? Is that correct?
I think I told somebody I was 21 and then realized that I was off by a year. I went up there in 1974 when I was 22. I started out actually laying out ads for News of the North, but I quickly got a job with CBC Radio, although my first job was as a receptionist. The thing about those years, the 1970s, was that you could get work easily, not quite like it is today. So this book, this novel, actually opens in the year 1975 in Yellowknife, and I have a small cast of characters who form a professional family in the radio station, the small radio station there, and in the backdrop are various things. One of those things is the Berger inquiry into the proposed Mackenzie Valley gas pipeline. And then, of course, the larger backdrop is the North itself.
Yeah, you just mentioned Thomas Berger. He lives in Vancouver, I think. Have you met him?
Well, I have met him. I met him up there. Now, our paths didn't cross very much. There was a team of CBC reporters who covered the Berger inquiry. I was not on that team. I was back at the station just doing the regular business of the day. But our paths have crossed a couple of times, and I did interview him, you know, by phone once or twice, but I haven't seen him. I've just, you know, followed him. I read his the biography that I think it was Carolyn Swayze wrote not too long ago, and he remains someone I've always been very impressed by him.
One reviewer wrote that he's sort of a background character in this book because, I guess, ripped from history. You've included his work up there in the North at the time he had this inquiry about a pipeline. Is that correct?
Yes, the Mackenzie Valley gas pipeline. It's in the news again, you know. It hasn't been built so far, but there's every intention, I think, to have it built.
I wonder what he thinks about being sort of immortalized in this book.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder too. You'll have to ask him.
I'll have to ask him for you. Yeah. These characters in the book. Did you see any similarities to yourself in your experience? I guess your experience up there probably helped color these characters.
Well, of course. I mean, they are invented characters, but you don't invent characters from nothing. And so I've you know used myself and I've also you know taken sort of echoes and details from a variety of people that I've either met or read about. But I feel that I fairly successfully made these characters fictional characters. That is, I don't think anybody's going to feel written about. Judge Berger is different. That he is an historical figure. I don't fictionalize him. He's there doing what he was actually doing. So what I tried to do was make the radio station as accurate as I could, the Yellowknife as accurate as I could, and then bring my fictional characters into that setting and have them bring it to life.
One of the characters' names is Dido Paris.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come up with that name?
Well, the name Dido. Dido, I've only met one Dido. She actually worked in the CBC Reference Library in Toronto. And so years and years ago, I was just very struck by her name, by someone having the name Dido, who was the Queen of Carthage, and a tremendously charismatic and powerful figure. Aeneas, when he fled burning Troy and headed off, you know, on his travels with the intent of founding Rome, fetched up on the shores of Carthage, and he and Dido fell in love. Then he left, left her, and she committed suicide. It's a very dramatic story, and she's a big, big presence, a big, big figure. So in giving the name Dido to one of my characters, I was hoping to have that echo from the past and from mythology, so that the Dido in my book does not commit suicide, but she is a very vibrant presence. All sorts of people fall in love with her. She seems to be abundantly confident, and yet in some way, some fashion, she loses her way. So she's also very vulnerable, even while she remains very proud. So, and Dido Paris, well, the Paris part, I actually had an editor in the Netherlands whose last name was Paris, and I couldn't resist that name either.
Why did you, I guess, besides having lived there, the North seems to be such a great place to set a book. I know that there are a number of authors who set books in the North. Why for you the North, and what is it about the, I mean, I've never been there.
Yes.
What is it about the North that makes it such a wonderful place to write about and to read about?
Right. Well, the romance of the North is very much at the heart of this novel. Now, when I was young, I wanted to go north. I think that was somehow in the air or in the blood or something. My parents were both drawn to the north as well, although they didn't get there until after I did. In fact, the first time they went north was to visit me in Yellowknife. But I sort of grew up thinking of Canada as a northern country, and there were various reasons for that. My mother's a painter, and so I was, you know, aware of the Group of Seven and other Canadian painters, although in schools in Ontario, those paintings are reproductions of those paintings are on the walls. And what is it about the North that draws us? Well, I think it's the remoteness and the solitude and the space and the light, also the darkness, you know, and the air, and the stories that the North generates, so that there's a kind of Arctic literature that is full of stories about people learning or failing to learn things, about people, you know, becoming sort of facing challenges and becoming more than they were. And at the same time, of course, there is the whole Aboriginal culture and life in the North. So you have the history of the first peoples, and you have the even more ancient history of the land itself. And it does, I think, just simply capture our imaginations.
How long did you spend up north?
I lived there from 1974 to 1978 in Yellowknife.
And did you leave because you wanted to leave, or was that because of just professional considerations or married life?
Well, you know, I was young and somewhat ambitious. I thought I wanted to pursue my life in radio, and in going south, I hoped that I would find teachers who knew more, right? That is to say, I would gain more experience with people who are more experienced.
And another facet of the book, a component of the book, is radio. What is it? I mean, radio, I mean, 30 years ago when you were probably up north there, they were saying that radio was dying, that you know, television was going to be, you know, the most dominant thing. We've had computers since then, but still radio remains relevant. Do you see it that way?
Well, I do. I do see it that way. I mean, what you say is also true, of course. In 1975, television was about to displace radio in the North, and it, of course, it has. I mean, it's hard to compete with radio. It's hard to compete with television. Radio remains relevant, but on the edge, on the edges of our lives. And I would say that my characters are a bit like that, too. They tend to be off to the side a bit. They don't have dazzling careers. They kind of operate on the side of things. And in fact, one of the main characters, Harry Boyd, has had tremendous failure. Some success, some considerable success, but also tremendous failure in his life. And I do just feel an affinity for people like that.
Well, like your characters, the radio is fascinating. It is far more intimate than any other medium that I can think of.
Yes.
We still find it useful in terms of...
Yes, we do. You know, there was a big ice storm in Ottawa in 1998. And the big ice storm of 98, it was called. And radio really came into its own once again. It was, so long as you had a radio that with a battery, you could remain in touch. And it speaks to you very directly in your isolation. And so you are accompanied. You're still alone, but you're accompanied. And as you say, it's a very intimate, can be a very intimate medium.
I'm talking with Elizabeth Hay. The book is called Late Nights on Air, 3299 from McClelland and Stewart. I mentioned off the top that it's been shortlisted for the Giller Prize. You've been to the Giller Dance before. Is it easier this time around, having been there before, or what are you going through at this point before the actual award ceremony?
You know, it's a wonderful thing. I'm delighted to be on the shortlist, but it's not uncomplicated. And there's an element of nervousness that is always in the back of my mind. And I think that having been there before, I'll be better equipped to deal with it, but it's still difficult. I think you're very much on view, you know, because it's televised. And so there you are, you poor misbegotten authors, being watched as one of them wins and the others don't. And so you have to have a good sense of humor about it and just try to have a good time, you know, drink as much scotch as you can, and realize that the next day life will just go on. You'll return to your desk, your writing will humble you, as it always does, because writing is hard, and on you'll go.
This nervousness that you feel, mm-hmm. is this an anxiousness to win, or that if you lose?
I wouldn't mind winning. But I don't expect to win. You're asking me to put my finger on why I feel nervous, and I think that's part of the difficulty. It's hard to put your finger on it. I mean, clearly it's good news. It's great to be on the shortlist. There's a certain... And what do? You imagine yourself winning, which is unlikely, so you reel back and just imagine yourself losing. And you know there'll be a letdown. But I'm not a party girl at the best of times. So it's just going to take a certain human effort, you know, to get myself to the party. And believe me, I'm very happy to go. But you understand what I'm saying.
Right.
Even people who like to go to parties can be nervous beforehand. And these are parties that aren't televised. These are parties where the stakes aren't high. And in fact, the stakes are rather high on the Giller night.
How long did it take you to write this book?
It took me, I'd say, 3 years and a bit.
And when you're working in those 3 years, are you working exclusively on this book, or are you working on other projects?
Well, there are other things you're doing, of course, because... First of all, you get yourself a draft that you want somebody to read, and having arrived at that, it may take them a while to read it. There are always gaps or troughs of time that you have to fill in with other things. But for the most part, when I'm working on a novel, apart from those gaps, I tend to work on it full time.
And is it easier for you, because you've had bestsellers and prize winners in the past, to get the next project green-lighted?
Well, I mean, that's a good point. It's a very good practical question. I think that if you don't have very much success with one book, and success so often means sales, if your book doesn't sell at all, and it doesn't get any award recognition, then it can be very hard to get your next book published by the same publisher. So, yes, one of the good things about being on a Giller shortlist is that the publisher will be more eager to publish you again.
Was there pressure for this book, because it had been a Giller finalist before, that it had to be as successful as the previous book?
Well, you know, A Student of Weather was a Giller finalist. Garbo Laughs was not. And Late Nights on Air is. Is there pressure? Well, when you're working on a book, there's the pressure to make it as good as you can make it. And other considerations sort of have to fall away. But then once the book is printed, and once it's hitting the bookshelves, then there's a weight on the author. You know, you just get a kink in your neck as you wait for reaction. And that never gets any easier, I don't think.
You started in broadcasting. When did you know that you were going to be a writer? Or were you a writer all along?
Well, I started to write poetry when I was 15. And from that moment, I wanted to be a writer. And the other work that I did was to make a living. And when I worked in radio, I mean, I was drawn to radio because I liked radio so much. And it satisfied me professionally. I mean, I really wasn't doing too much in writing of my own in those years. I would, you know, try to write some poetry, try to write a bit of prose. It reached the point, though, where I felt like I was divided in half. There was the radio person, and there was my own writing person, and there was this huge chasm between them. I felt kind of schizophrenic. Then the next stage was realizing that, in fact, the writing that I was doing on my own didn't have to be so very different, and the radio writing could be more like it. That is to say, there are certain things they have that good writing has in common, and I didn't have to be so schizophrenic.
Right.
that there's more room in radio for creative writing than I first thought.
How do you write? Do you write on a computer?
I write. I use steno pads. I do a lot of writing by hand, and I always have a steno pad with me in case you know, to jot down things I think of or notice that might be of use later. Then I put what I've written on the computer and print it out. So I've got something that I would say is typed to work on. It's a combination, therefore, of longhand and computer. I don't usually write directly onto the computer, though. I usually go the longhand route first.
Finally, Elizabeth, whenever I have a writer on, especially a novelist, I always like to ask them about the importance of reading in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
As a writer, how important is it for you to read?
It's actually inextricable from writing. When I am stuck with my writing, I just turn to a book and start to read for a while, and reading seems to loosen up my mind again and get language flowing. And often, first thing in the morning, when I'm at my desk, I'll start just by reading a bit of poetry, and it just seems to get those brain cells flowing. Otherwise, they get kind of stuck and feel very empty.
Elizabeth, it's been delightful to talk to you.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Congratulations on this book, and continued good luck with it.
Thank you, Joseph, very much.
The book is called Late Nights on Air, $32.99 from McClelland & Stewart. I'm Joseph Planta.